Guys, let's open up the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God,
grant me the
serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Okay, fellas, this is a Tuesday night alumni meeting, and normally we got a format where, you know, it's questions, answers, and tonight we got a lead. Before I jump into that real quick, who had weekend passes? Weekend passes, how'd it go?
Good, bad, different?
Anybody go to a meeting? Hey. Yeah, I know, it took you. Okay. Sponsors, who's got sponsors in the program now? Hi, one back there. Nobody got any sponsors? Temporary? Well, I guess a temporary sponsor counts. Okay. Fellas, let me do this. I'm going to give you a shortcut. We're all looking for softer and easier ways. I'm going to give them to you. One, don't drink. Two, read the big book. Three, go to meetings. And four, get a sponsor. Don't try to work this dude all by yourself. Go out there and find somebody that's got what you want. Grab on to them and ask. I think, you know, for me, sponsor made, he didn't make me sober, and he didn't keep me sober, but we all got a rough time. We all have our time. And he was there when I needed him, and still there today. Whatever. The guy I asked to give a lead tonight, first time I met him, he gave a lead, and, you know, all I know is it made me sit up and take attention. Then I went to two or three meetings afterwards, and goddamn, he's still giving leads. You know, I couldn't believe this guy giving leads, but whatever. Gave him a couple weeks to rest, and I asked him to give a lead again tonight for us. It's his lead, but it's our story. And with that, I give you Gabe.
Good evening. My name is Gabe Chavez, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, before I got up here, Bill asked me if I was nervous to talk in front of a microphone, and I'm not. It's getting up in front of a group that makes me nervous. You know, and I give a lot of leads around the Dayton area, and it's not because I have anything profound to say or any great words of wisdom to say. It's that I know that the message I have to carry is a story of an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, and if you're here because you have a drinking problem and you recognize that as a problem, then you're an alcoholic. You know, Tom brought up a very specific thing when he was reading the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it only mentions alcohol two times. Once, the first step where we admit that we're an alcoholic, our life's unmanageable and we're powerless over alcohol, and the 12th step where we carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. All in between, from 2 to 11, deals with life, dealing how to live on a daily, daily, daily base. And that's what I'm trying to do today in alcohol. I'm trying to live my life alcohol-free. I'm trying to deal with my disease of alcoholism. I'm trying to live a better life than I lived before. And I didn't know how to do that. I've been an alcoholic, and I drank for 27 years. You know, the only thing that I know how to do to change my life is to change my thinking. You know, there are three types of people in this world. Those that make things happen, those that watch things happen, and those who say, "What happened?" And I was one of those people that always said, "What happened?" You know, I was always amazed that I could not deal on life's terms as life dictated it. Well, anyway, that's my little spiel about why I'm up here tonight. I want to thank you, Tom, for asking me. You know, I've heard about this meeting up here. I didn't know a lot about it, and I'm glad he brought me because I never found it. You know, you're really back here in the woods. You know, and I go to a... Right. I go to a lot of meetings. I go to a meeting every day. On weekends, I go to two or three. And it's not because Alcoholics Anonymous needs Gabe Chavez to come to his meetings to fill up his rooms. I go because I need to go. I need to keep into my recovery. You know, I didn't know how to stop drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is teaching me a better way of life and suggesting ways that I can do this on a daily basis so I can maintain my sobriety and keep on the road of recovery. And that's all that I ask for, is that I live my life one day at a time, and that's all they ask me to do. It's a very simple, simple program. But we as complicated people make it complicated. We make it difficult on ourselves. You know, I truly believe that when I was born, I was conceived with love. I don't believe my parents conceived me to hurt me. There was love there. And when I was born, I was born into a world of love. While my parents couldn't afford to keep me when I was young, I came from a very poor family. I come from Las Vegas, New Mexico, not Las Vegas, Nevada, where all the lights are and all the excitement is, but Las Vegas, New Mexico, where we have dirt streets, we had a dirt floor, we had stucco walls, we had no curtains and no shades. We came from a very poor family. They couldn't afford to keep me as a child, so they shipped me off to live with my grandparents. And I lived with my grandparents for about 5 or 6 years. And during those 5 or 6 years, I had a very, very loving, caring, warm relationship with my grandparents. Now, I can remember those as happy days. Those are the only times I can remember in my childhood that I was truly a happy child, truly knew what love was all about, truly knew what caring was all about. I can remember my grandfather. He was a coal miner, and every day he would go off to the coal fields. And every day he would come home. The bus would drop him off in the street. You know, I'd run from the house that we lived on, which was about a quarter of a mile away. I waited every day in anticipation of him coming home. And I'd run to the street to meet my grandfather. And every day he got off that bus, he had one of these old hard hats on with like a flashlight, you know, down in the tunnel so he could see. His face was covered with soot. He had one of those old bib overalls on, and he always carried a big lunch pail. And the only reason I ran out to meet my grandfather, not because of love and everything like that, it was because I wanted to get to that lunch bucket. And he always saved something for me from his lunch that day. And he'd open it up, and there'd be a cookie, or there'd be a piece of bread, or there'd be something in there for me, and I loved the aroma that came out of that lunch pail. And he'd grab my hand and say, "How you doing, bub?" And we'd walk back to the house. We did this every day. And I can remember those happy times. And there was love there. And I was a happy child. Then the day came that my parents came and got me. And when they came and got me, they took me to Denver, Colorado. And that's where we took up home. We lived there for about 3 years. But you know, something happened to Gabe Chavez. Coming from an environment where I was truly loved and cared for, I went into a household where there was total chaos all the time. My mother and father fought constantly. I was physically and verbally abused from the time they picked me up until the time I left that home. I'll tell you about that later. Now, I lived in constant fear. I couldn't understand, and I didn't know what was happening in my life. Coming from a place of love and to a place of total chaos and hurt, I had thought I had lost the love of living. You know, I didn't want to live. I didn't know. I was a small child. I couldn't understand. I lived in total fear. I don't think I said anything of this sort, but I'm sure I thought it, that I don't want to grow up to be like these people. And at the age of 8, my mother and father divorced. I don't recall any alcoholism in my family at that time. I do recall they drank a couple of, you know, they drank once in a while, but I don't recall them drinking all the time. But I do know that I lived in fear. I do know that my mother was the dominant feature in our household. My father was kind of passive. She ruled the household. We did exactly as she said. If we didn't, we got a slap across the head, a kick in the pants. We were yelled at. We were shoved. We were beat. All done by my mother. And that scared the hell out of me. You know, when my father divorced her, he went to Seattle, Washington. And a couple months later, he sent for me. I thought that was the happiest day of my life. I left this house where I lived in total fear and I went to Seattle, Washington to live with my dad. And I lived with my dad from the age of 8 until the age of 16. And from the age of 8 until the age of 16, I had a normal childhood. I came from love. I went into fear. I lost love. Now I was back into love. I couldn't understand it. Why were things this way? But I lived with my father. He was a bachelor. I was a son. We lived by ourselves. We had a great time. I did good in school. I didn't get in any trouble. I didn't do any bad things. And he took care of me. We did father-son things. You know, but at the age of 16, something else changed. You know, he came home one day, walked in the house, and he walked in with this lady. And he called me over, and he said, "Son, this is your mother." You know, he came home with a wife. I didn't know he was dating anybody. I didn't know he was even going out with a woman. I didn't know he was even seeing a woman. But he came out of the clear blue sky and said, "This is your mother." And you know, of course, what I did. I automatically rebelled against that. Here I came from love, went into fear, into hate, lost love, came back into love, and now it's been taken away from me again. He's going to give his love to a woman. He's going to give it to my stepmother. He's going to take it away from me. He's going to abandon me, and that's what I thought. And I rebelled against that. And I made their life total hell. And for 6 months, I stayed in that home. At the age of 16 and a half, I left. Until this day, I'm 45 years old. I have not spent one night under the roof of my father. That's a terrible thing. But that's what I did. That's what my thinking did. It wasn't what he did. It's what I did. It's what I perceived to be truth. It's how I lived it. Now, I'm going to tell you about a love affair I had. You know, we as alcoholics, we think we're romantic. We think that we're God's gift to women. We think that we have all this charm. And we live this way. Because we live in alcoholism and we live without any fear. We can do the things that we normally can't do when we're sober. Because we don't know how to live on life's terms as it's predicted to us. So we fantasize. And in our fantasies, we are romantics. And I want to tell you a love story. It's called The Affair. I first met her when I was in high school. She was older than I and exciting. And I knew she'd been around. My parents warned me to have nothing to do with her. They claimed no good can come from this relationship. But I kept meeting her on the sly. She was so sophisticated and so worldly. She made me feel grown up each time I was with her. And I loved to take her to a party in those days because she was almost always the center of attention. And when I started college, I kept seeing her. When I found my own place, she was a frequent guest. And it wasn't long before that she moved in with me. Now, you may call that common law, but to my parents, it was heartbreaking. But I kept reminding myself I wasn't a child anymore. Besides, it was legal. And we lived together through my college and into my early days in business. You know, and I seldom went anywhere without her. But I wasn't blind, and I knew she was cheating on me. What's worse is I didn't care. As long as she was there for me when I needed her, it didn't matter. I didn't care. Now, the longer we lived together, the more I became dependent upon her. But the feeling wasn't mutual. She found delight in making me look foolish in front of my friends. But still, I couldn't leave. You know, it became a love-hate relationship, and I figured that her glamour was nothing but a cheap mask to hide her spite and cynicism. I no longer could see her true beauty after I knew her true character. But you know, old habits are hard to break. We had invested many years in each other, and I knew that our relationship caused me to lose self-respect for myself. But still, she was the center of my life. Now, I became deeply depressed. I knew she was largely responsible for my misery. I finally told her I was going to leave. Now, that took a lot of guts. But I finally told her I was going to leave for good. You know, I still see her around now and then, and she's as beautiful as when we first met. And I think about her once in a while. And I'm not boasting up here when I tell you she'd take me back in a minute. But for the grace of God, I don't have to go back with her. So if you see her out there, you give her my regards because I don't hate her. I just love her too much. And chances are you know the family. The name is alcohol. I fell in love with alcohol at the age of 16 and a half. I took my first drink when I was 16 and a half. I made a fool of myself in front of my friends. I got drunk. I blacked out. And I passed out. And that's what I did for the next 27 years. I was totally out of control. I perceived that I was okay. I believed I was okay. So therefore, I lived as I thought I was okay. And all that time, I was out of control. I lived in a fantasy world. I didn't know how to get out of this fantasy world, and I wanted to come back into a reality world that I could live like normal people, whatever quote-unquote normal people are. I didn't know. I just knew that they lived different than I did, but I thought I was like they were. All my friends drank. All my friends got drunk. All my friends blacked out. All my friends did stupid things. So therefore, I must be okay. I'm doing like they're doing. But the problem is, all these people that live in all these houses and going to work every day and living a fine life and having a nice family and having the love that I always wanted weren't doing those things. So therefore, was I normal? No. I perceived that I was. I believed that I was. The truth, the fact of the matter was that I was totally out of control. I lived in a fantasy world and a reality world that I didn't know anything about. Have any of you ever saw the picture, the movie, The Wizard of Oz? How many have seen that? I'll tell you a story about The Wizard of Oz. It relates directly to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the fellowship of every alcoholic out there that lives like I lived in a fantasy world. You know, Dorothy was on this farm with her little dog Toto. This big tornado came by and whirled her in the world up in the sky. And she landed and knocked her head out, and she knocked herself out. And when she woke up, where was she? She was in this fantasy land, in the land of the Munchkins. She didn't know where she was. The only thing she knew is that she wanted to get out of there, out of this fantasy world, back to reality, back to her farm in Kansas. But you know, she didn't know how to do that. She was totally lost, confused, and she didn't know what to do. Along came this good fairy, and the good fairy told her. He says, all you have to do is find the Wizard of Oz. And why? Because the wonderful things he does. So what does she do? She starts off to look for the wizard because of the wonderful things he does. He can get her back to Kansas. This is what the good fairy says. But you know, on the long way to her journey to find the Wizard of Oz, she runs into three characters, three people. You know, that are unlike any other person that she has ever met in her life. She met a straw man. This straw man was witless and brainless. He had no sense at all. She met a lion who was cowardly and afraid of everything. And she met a tin man who was empty inside. And with these three people, they skipped along the road, the yellow brick road, trying to find the Emerald City and trying to find the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz, because of the wonderful things he does. And when they finally got to the Emerald City and they looked up the wizard, guess what they found out? This wizard was a phony. This wizard could not perform magic. He was a phony. But the one thing that was wonderful about the wonderful Wizard of Oz, because of the wonderful things he does, is that he is a positive wizard. This wizard can put positive things in your mind. And he decided that he was going to reward the three characters that were with Dorothy because of all of the problems they had in reaching him. So he goes to the straw man who is witless and brainless, and he says, what can I do for you to reward you for bringing Dorothy to us? He says, I am dumb and I am stupid, and I wish that I had a brain so that I could be smart like all the smart people. And the wizard told the straw man, he says, you know that all the brains of the world and all the smart people of the world and all the scholars in the world, they all have one thing in common. One thing in common. They have a diploma. So he gives the straw man a diploma. And instantly, the straw man believes. He thinks that he is smart. And he is. And he starts rattling off these formulas of mathematics. He is smart. He believes it because he has what all smart men have. He has a diploma. He turns to the cowardly lion. He says, what can I do for you, cowardly lion, for bringing Dorothy through all this hazard? Bring me to the wizard. And the lion says, you know, he says, I am a coward. He says, I'm afraid. I want to be brave. And the wizard looks at him and says, you know, what all brave men and all courageous men have in common is that they have a medal. They have a badge. And he gave that lion a medal and he gave him a badge. And instantaneously, that lion was ferocious and brave. There was nothing he was afraid of and nothing he would do that would scare him. He believed, he thought he was a brave lion because of the badge of courage and the medal he could show that he was a courageous lion. And he turned to the tin man and he says, tin man, what can I do for you? And the tin man says, I am empty inside. I have no hope and no love. He says, you know that one thing that all men have that are common to make them loving and making them kind and making them fulfilled inside is that they have a heart. And that heart ticks. And he gave him a clock that ticked in the form of a heart. And he gave it to the tin man. Instantaneously, the tin man thought he was a loving and kind man. He believed it. He thought it. And he was. And he turned to Dorothy and he says, what can I do for you, Dorothy? She says, I just want to go back to Kansas. What can you give me to get me to go back to Kansas? He says, there isn't anything I can do. But if you click your heels together and really, truly believe and think that you can go back to Kansas, it can be achieved. She clicked her heels 3 times. And when she woke up out of that fantasy world, she was back in Kansas. There's a moral to this story. If you believe and if you think you can achieve, you will. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous gives you that opportunity for a second life. How many times in our lifetimes have we said, if I can only live my life over again, what would I do? Alcoholics Anonymous has given you that chance. What will you do with yourself? We are all wizards. You know that the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was formed by a phony wizard? Bill W., a great man, was a phony, he was a drunk, he was a hopeless case. But he believed and he thought that there was a better way of life, and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was born. We are all wizards if we choose to be. If you choose to be the positive wizard, or you choose to be the negative wizard, only you can make that choice. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous cannot make you sober. A treatment center cannot make you sober. A doctor cannot make you sober. Your wife cannot make you sober. Tom cannot make you sober. But they can give you the suggested ways that you can recover if you choose to have that life. A new freedom and a new happiness is the first step, or the first promise of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's achievable. You know the difference between an achiever and a non-achiever? The only difference is the way he thinks. I dare you to think positively. I dare you to live your life different than you have lived it in the past. For if you dare to believe, your dreams can come true. My life today is different than it was before. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you a big drunkalogue. I will qualify myself by being a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous because I have had 5 DWIs. I have been in jail 7 times. I have had 7 accidents, all under the influence of alcohol. When I came into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, my wife hated me. She was ready to divorce me. My kids hated me. They did not want to be in the same room with me. I was about ready to be fired. I had lost all respect of human beings, all love of human beings. I didn't care. I did not want to exist in the world that the world is today. I said the world was against Gabe Chavez. Everything that I did in my life was their fault. I could not understand. I always said, what happened? I was one of those type of people. I didn't know why my life was the way it was. And it was only because of the fact that I was unmanageable. I could always manage to do the things I didn't want to do, but never could manage the things that I wanted to do. That's unmanageable. I was out of control. You know, I was in this program for 8 months. And for 8 months, I did not drink. And for 8 months, I lived in misery. And for 8 months, I was in a great state of depression. But you know, I went to meetings every single day, and I still do today. And the reason I went is because I knew that when I went to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, when I got in the confines of these walls, I was okay. I can talk AA, I could live AA, I could feel AA, and I felt okay. But the minute I walked out the doors into the real world, I left all that feeling that I had in those rooms. I could not live my life outside those rooms the way that I lived them inside those rooms. So for 8 months in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, all I did was not drink and go to meetings. You see what I'm getting at? The only thing that I didn't do to make myself better is that I didn't change the way that I thought. I didn't change my thinking pattern, and I didn't believe. You know, I went to a treatment center, and when I got out of that treatment center, I went to work, and I told my bosses, you know, I just came out of a 28-day treatment center. I'm an alcoholic. My life's going to change. You're going to see the change in Gabe Chavez. They said, I hope so. We really, truly hope that you do change. But you know, I worked with a certain company. I've been with them now for 9 years. At that time, I had been with them 7.5 years. And for 7.5 years, every year on our anniversary day, which we call our seniority day, which is our hiring in date, we get evaluated on the kind of job performance that we do. They call it a personal appraisal, job performance appraisal. And for 7 years, every year, they appraised me as a highly effective supervisor, which in effect meant I was doing an outstanding job. And all that time, I had been an active alcoholic. I had been doing all the bad things that I didn't want to do. I had been creating a lot of disturbances that I didn't want to create. I had been acting a fool that I didn't want to act. I had been doing all the wrong things, and still my bosses on my anniversary date for my appraisal told me that I was doing an outstanding job. When I came out of that treatment center and told them I was an alcoholic and that they would see the change in Gabe Chavez, you can imagine what I thought. Now, my next appraisal, I am going to get a glowing, outstanding appraisal. Well, my appraisal came. You know, and I had a new boss. She was a woman. She took me into the office. She says, Gabe Chavez, I got your appraisal. I couldn't wait. I knew I was going to get a great, glowing report on how good I had been because I had changed. I hadn't drank for 8 months. Been going to AA for 8 months. I had been doing what I thought AA told me to do. But the only thing I had been doing is not drinking and going to meetings. So I got my appraisal. She says, I did not make this appraisal out of you, but your two previous bosses did. But I'm only here to present it to you. I said, okay, lay it on me. You know, and I'm sitting back waiting for that great pat on the back. The end result of that appraisal was that I was a barely competent employee and I was hanging on to my job with a thread. I was highly, highly upset about that. I said, what the hell is wrong with you people? I have not taken a drink for 8 months. I've been going to AA meetings every day. I told you I was going to change. You're using my alcoholism against me. Now that I admit that I'm an alcoholic, you're using it against me. You don't recognize change. You don't care about change. And if you did, you don't give a damn about change. I said, where are the two people that made that evaluation out? Why aren't they here to face me? They don't have the guts.
This is the end of side one. Turn tape over now to...
She said, they're busy right now. I'm your boss. I gave your appraisal even though they made it out. I said, I'm going to go talk to them. And you know, I did. I walked out of her office and I slammed that door. And I went down to the plant and I walked to that first gentleman's office. He was holding a meeting. And I walked right into his meeting, and I told those people, get out. And they got out. He stood there in amazement. He was stunned that I would do something like this. And I told him, I says, you know, I just got my appraisal, and you didn't have the guts enough to face me in person. You know that I admitted I was an alcoholic and I went through treatment. You know that I came back to you and I told you that I was going to change. But you can't recognize change. You don't care about change. And if you did, you don't give a damn. You're holding my alcoholism against me. I didn't give him an opportunity to reply. I slammed the door as I left. And I went looking for number two. And I found him. And he was in his office and he was alone. And I walked in there and I slammed that door. And I told him the same thing I told the two previous people. That I just got my evaluation. I said, and I told him, you knew I was going to change, you knew I was an alcoholic, and I went through the same thing, and when I was done, I didn't give him an opportunity to answer me, and I slammed the door, and I walked out. And I walked to my office, and there was a gathering of my peers in there, and I told them the same thing. I just got my appraisal, and I went through the whole story, and I told them how they're using my alcoholism against me, how they don't recognize change, and if they do, they don't give a damn. And I slammed the door behind them, and I walked out of that plant. And I went home, and my poor wife was coming home from jogging, and she grabbed her, and I grabbed her, and I said, let's go upstairs. You don't believe what these people had done to me at work. I told her the story that I told them. I said, you know, for 8 years, I had been getting highly effective evaluations, and after I admitted I was an alcoholic and I changed my life, they told me I was hanging it on my job with a thread. I said, we're going to write a letter to the plant manager, and we're going to complain. And we're going to tell them how they're using alcoholism for people that are in recovery against them. And I says, I'm going to dictate it, and you're going to write it. And I slammed the door on her, and I walked out. I was fuming. I went to a meeting that night, and she went with me. And all through that meeting, I didn't hear a thing that went on in that meeting. I kept jabbing her. I said, when we get home, we're going to write that letter. When we get home, we're going to write that letter. How they do this to Gabe Chavez, a recovering alcoholic who hadn't drank for 8 months, who's been going to meetings every single night, who told them that he was going to change. You know, I did that for a couple of weeks, and I was fuming out on the job. I was horrible. I was terrible, you know, and they just stayed away from me. No wonder they didn't fire me. But, you know, one day I went to the Crossroads Club, which is down on Main Street, which is Old Shawn Acres, which is an orphanage. I walked into a step meeting. And as they do every single night and every single meeting and everywhere in this country and this great nation of ours and this world, they always open up the meeting with a serenity prayer. The first time in my life, after 8 months of sobriety, that I finally understood what the serenity prayer was. The things they say in there is change. The only thing that I had done was stop drinking and go to meetings. I had not changed my attitude. I had not changed my thinking. I felt like the world lifted off of my shoulders. I understood that I was not practicing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and all of my affairs, but only one night and 1 hour a day in those meetings and never carrying it outside the doors. I admitted I was an alcoholic. I admitted my life was unmanageable. I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, and that's all I had done. Nothing else. From the minute I walked out of that meeting that night to today, I practiced the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in all of my affairs to the best of my ability, one day at a time. And I went back the next day, and I told that young lady that I chewed out for just carrying the message of my appraisal, that I was sorry, that I apologized. I went to the next gentleman, and I told him. He was holding a meeting, by the way, the same thing. And I walked in, and he saw me coming, and I just knew he was cringing, and he just knew I was going to do something stupid. And I waited patiently until he was done. And he called me in his office, and I apologized to him. And I went to the next gentleman, and I apologized to him. I made my amends directly and as soon as possible, and in person. You know, to this day, I have not created a disturbance at work, and I have changed my thinking and my attitude about sobriety and about living. You know, I get compliments at work from these people that it is a pleasure to be around Gabe Chavez. They can see physically and mentally the change in my attitude and the change that I way that I perform my job. you know. I said they couldn't recognize change. I said if they did recognize change, they didn't give a damn. Well, it's true. They did recognize change. I was not getting better, and I was not stabling out. I was getting worse. I was doing all the bad things. My alcoholism progressed right with me in my sobriety, even though I did not drink. My attitudes and my thinking progressed as if I had been drinking. So I had to learn to think different. You know, I'm a standing miracle up here today. Tom's a sitting miracle, and all of you people are miracles. You know, I truly believe that. I truly believe that I am covered under an umbrella, and this is my miracle. And if I want my miracle to work, I have to stand up and fight for it. You know, my umbrella has three little pies in it. One is honesty. One is truth. And one is believability. I honestly, truly believe that I could survive a better way of life one day at a time. And that's all that is expected of Gabe Chavez, the alcoholic. You know, we are a survival, a fellowship of survivors is what I want to say. And in order to survive, you must believe. In order to believe, you must hope. In order to hope, you must dream. I have a dream. Martin Luther King once said that he had a dream and that he had climbed the mountain and he saw what's on the other side. I, too, have climbed that mountain and I see what's on the other side for Gabe Chavez, the alcoholic. I have a dream. And if I continue to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and all of my affairs, my dreams will come true. You know that I had a hard time in believing that there was a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity when I was insane. I did not believe. I did not trust. I did not think there was. And a gentleman told me a simple story that brought me into my heart so that I understand and I do today have a power greater than me, which I choose to call God. He told me a story of God. He said that when God created heavens and earth, he created men. And when he created man, he knew he had a problem. And he thought that he didn't want to have any more problems in his life for a while, so he thought he would hide from man. And he gathered these three angels up, and he asked their opinion on where he could hide from man so that man would not bug him. And he asked the first angel, "Do you have any idea where I could hide so man won't bother me?" And the angel thought, he says, "Sure, I got the perfect place for you to hide. You hide on the highest mountain. Man surely won't find you up there." And God says, "No, that's a good idea. But I foresee in the future airplanes and helicopters and mountain climbers. Surely man will find me there. I don't think I'll hide on that mountain." He asked the second angel, "Do you have any idea where I can hide from man so man won't bother me?" And the second angel thought, and he says, "Yeah, I got the perfect place for you to hide. You hide in the deepest part of the ocean. Surely man will not find you down there." God thought for a while. He said, "That's a good place to hide. But I foresee sonar, and I foresee submarines, and I foresee deep sea divers. Man will find me down there. I don't think I'll hide down there." And he turned to the third angel and he says, "Do you have any idea where I can hide from man so man won't bother me?" And he says, "I got the perfect place for you to hide from man. He will never find you there. You hide in every man's heart. Man surely won't find you there. So if you have a problem finding a higher power in your life, all you have to do is look in your heart. Have faith. Faith to me is where my heart can see the light. For my eyes only saw darkness before. If you believe it, and you think it, you can find him. He's there for you. He's carrying me every day. I pray to my God in the morning, and I pray to my God at night. And I ask you to pray for me as I pray for you." If we truly believe that we can change our lives, we can. You know, when I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not love another human being. I did not care for another human being. I did not Have respect for another human being. I'm going to tell you another story. Story about a little girl. Now, this little girl, when she started school, she knew she was different than the other children by the way the children treated her. You see, she was born with a cleft palate. She had a crooked nose. She had an uneven lip. She had uneven teeth. She had garbled speech. And she truly hated that. And she was totally convinced that nobody outside of her immediate family loved her or even cared to. You know, when she started the second grade, she met a teacher by the name of Mrs. Leonard. Now, Mrs. Leonard, all the children adored, but no one was going to come to adore this child like this little girl. I mean, this teacher like this little girl. And for a special reason. And I'm going to tell you why. See, Miss Leonard every year had a hearing test to test the hearing capability of each child. And that hearing test consisted of a child getting up from her desk, going to the teacher's desk, plugging one ear and pointing one ear towards the teacher, which the teacher would whisper something, and the child would repeat it. And this is how they tested their hearing. Now, this little girl knew that she had to get up there. But before she got up there, she thought she was going to cheat. You see, she also had a bad ear, and she didn't want to have one more thing singled about her that made her different than she already was. And she also knew by what the children were getting whispered at that the teacher would whisper things like, is the sky blue, or your shoes red, is the grass green. And she wondered, what would Miss Leonard whisper to her? Well, her turn came, last as it always did, and she went up to the teacher's desk, and she pointed her bad ear towards the teacher and her good ear towards the door, and she pretended to plug the good ear. She didn't want to miss what Miss Leonard had to whisper to her. And then the words came out of Mrs. Leonard's mouth that surely God must have put there, for what she whispered to this little girl changed this little girl's life forever. What she said softly to this little girl, I wished you were my little girl. That teacher gave that little girl unconditional love, not for what she wanted to be or wished to be, but simply for what she was, a little girl, a child of God, a human being, nothing more, nothing less. When I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous people whispered into my ear, not seven simple words that changed my life forever, but 11 simple words that changed my life forever. For what they whispered to me, God surely must have put there. They whispered softly, we're going to love you till you learn to love yourself. Not for what I wished to be or wanted to be, but for what I was, a child of God, a human being, an alcoholic. Nothing more, nothing less. I found love in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous unconditionally. And what they were saying is they were going to love me till I learned to love myself. And once I learned to love myself, if I knew God could love me, if God can forgive me, if God can care for me, why couldn't I do that for myself? And I found out that I was not a bad person, that I was capable of loving another human being. But before I could do that, I had to love myself and care for myself. And I got that today. Today I can love me and know I'm okay, and I can love another human being. And I can care for another human being. And I can respect another human being. And I can forgive another human being as I can forgive myself today, because God does that too. I am no better and no worse than the next person. And there's a song out today by Whitney Houston who says, the greatest love of all to achieve is learning to love yourself. You heard that song? And if you ever take anything away from me, there's one thing you can't take. You cannot take away my dignity. You know, I had no dignity. I had no self-esteem. I had no love in my life. I did not want to exist on this world because this world was not worth living. The world was my problem. So a man came home from work one day, and his young son was sitting there waiting on him. He came home, he sat in the chair. He grabbed a drink and he grabbed a magazine. He wanted to relax. He had a hard day at work. The little boy walked up to him and says, Daddy, would you play with me? Well, I says, son, after I finish reading my magazine, after I finish my drink, I want to relax. I'll play with you then. The little boy was insistent that he wanted to see his daddy and he wanted to play with him. He missed him. He loved him. He said, Daddy, would you please play with me? And the father became a little annoyed, and he says, I think I'll do something. He says, I think I'll keep him occupied. And if I keep him occupied long enough, I can relax, have my drink, and read my magazine. So out of the magazine he was reading, he tore out a picture. And on the picture of that magazine he pulled out was a picture of the world. And he folded that picture up, and he tore it into shreds, and he tore it into more shreds. He made like a puzzle out of it, and he handed it to his son. He said, "Son, this is a picture of the world, a globe." He says, "You take this back to your room, and when you're finished pasting that picture all together, you bring it back to me, and then I'll play with you." See, the father thought he had time. Well, the young son was excited because his father gave him something to do, and he was gone just a matter of minutes, and he came back with a picture all pasted together with Scotch tape, a picture of the world. The father was truly amazed. He says, "Son, how did you do this?" And the little boy looked his dad right in the eye and said, "Dad, I had no idea what the world looked like. But on the other side of that picture was a picture of a man, and I had an idea what the man looked like, and I figured that if I could put the man together back together right, the world would be okay. In a perfect world. I thought the world was my problem. What Alcoholics Anonymous is doing to me today is putting the man back together right so I can live in a world that's okay." There are many wonderful stories in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are many roads in the Alcoholics Anonymous that can lead you to the recovery. And I'm going to close with one last story. I listened to a young lady at the Southside Club. I don't know if any of you have been out there before. It's called the Acceptance Group. Her name is Karen. And she told us a week or so ago at Southside. I don't know if I can tell exactly the way she did, but I'm sure the meaning would be the same. She said that her life in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous today is like a book with five chapters. She said, chapter one, she's walking down the street. There's a hole in the street. She falls in the hole. Takes her a long time to crawl out of that hole. Chapter two, she walks down the street. There's a hole in the street. She falls in the hole. She thinks, I've been here before. It takes her a long time to crawl out of that hole. Chapter three, she walks down the street. There's a hole in the street. She falls in. She knows she's been in that hole before. It takes her a long time to crawl out of that hole. Chapter 4, she walks down the street. There's a hole in the street. She sees a hole. She falls in anyway. She says, "I am responsible for my own actions." She gets out of that hole immediately. In Chapter 5, she walks down a different street. You know, the road to recovery is different roads you can take. If you want to continue to hurt, you keep walking down that street that has that hole in it. You keep falling in. If you don't want to hurt no more, take a different street. You know, I don't want you to ever walk in front of me because I may not follow. And I don't ever want you to walk behind me because I may not lead you. What I want you people to do is you walk beside me, for what I need is a friend. There's a good man in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous by the name of John Collier. I don't think I'm breaking his anonymity. That's the way he introduces himself. He said that when he came into the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, he could not see the light at the end of the tunnel, but today he walks in the sunshine. I too someday hope I have the honor of walking in this man's shadow on the road to recovery. Someday I'll walk in the sunshine along with John. You know, I have no way of thanking the people in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for what they've done to me and to my road to recovery. The only way I know how to thank you people, thank the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, is by paraphrasing the words of George M. Cohan, who after each performance on Broadway would turn to the audience to show his appreciation. He would say something to this effect: "My mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My wife and my children thank you. And from the bottom of my heart, I thank you."
Does anybody got any questions? You guys, we've got a couple minutes here. Any questions at all? Something you want to share, talk about with Gabe?
No questions, but I'd like to tell Gabe, I really enjoyed it. The positive of the way that you put it back together. And I think it was very beneficial for me personally.
Thank you. I'm glad you were here.
My name's Greg. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Hi, Greg.
I want to thank you for your lead. It really touched my heart, got me thinking about the things that I do and don't do, and what I have to go find.
Anybody else?
My name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Dave,
I'd like to say, thank you.
My name is Harold. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you for being here.
My name is Craig. I'm an alcoholic. Give me something to think about this evening. I like the very positive approach. I will have something to think about. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig.
My name is Jim. I'm an alcoholic. And it got me to thinking and thinking about putting men together and the world over there. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Keep calm down.
My name is Don. I'm an alcoholic.
I've
been about 5 days in Buck Nice. I'm pretty good.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I'm Ron. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Ron.
I kind of can relate to that whole one. So, several times, I fell in that hole. And it's the same hole, but each time it looks different, and I can kind of relate to all of them.
Go down that Denver street.
Yeah.
Anybody else? Well,
Craig's got the closing remarks.
My name is Craig. I'm not the host.
In closing, let me remind you and you and me that although the individual has the right to be wrong in his facts, every individual has the right to his own opinion. Please remember that the opinions expressed here tonight are strictly those of the individual. Remember also that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of the AA tradition. The things you've heard and the things that have been shared with you tonight are spoken and shared in confidence. Let them be treated as confidential. If you have listened with an open mind, if you try to absorb what you've heard and seen, you are bound to gain a better understanding of yourself or of your problem and of a way to better handle that problem. Talk to each other. Reason with each other. But let there be no gossip and no criticism of another. Instead, let there be love, acceptance, understanding, and companionship. Will you please stand, hold hands, and join me in the Lord's prayer?
You got them all plugged up? Gabe, you want to start it out?
Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,